What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Playoffs? 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 Playoffs?
It's always soccer in Philadelphia on a Thursday with a couple of rough riders. Kevin Kincaid, of course, from Crossing Broad. Baxter is also a rough rider as well, even though he's a dog. And rejoining the program is a person who co-founded the podcast. Everybody, welcome back. It's Dave Zeitlin.
Can you ever say co-founded? I feel like you texted me once and you're like, do you want to be on a podcast? I'm like, all right. And that was basically my extent of it.
So you're downplaying your contributions to
I did drive to Fishtown a lot, so that was a big sacrifice on my end.
You did, man. That was your like, if you feel as though you didn't contribute to starting the thing, like if you're going to say it's my idea, then surely you get credit for driving over here at least 50 times, right?
50? Was it that many? Wow.
I don't know. Well, we're up to episode number 88. How many of them did you did at least like?
Maybe 40. Half. Yeah, that sounds about right. Be 40. Yeah.
So you're too modest, man. You're like Ray Gaddis. You got to give yourself more credit for your contributions.
I know. I kind of miss Fishtown. I haven't been recently. I did go to a restaurant once, Soraya. That was pretty good. Fishtown, right?
Soraya, the Lebanese food.
Yeah, that was good. Good place.
What kind of food do the Lebanese eat?
I'm trying to remember it. They good Middle Eastern stuff. And I remember we were sitting at like this area where you could watch the guy make the bread.
Oh.
So, we were watching him do that and the bread would come out like really hot and delicious. So, yeah.
Well, that's how I like my bread, hot and delicious.
Hot and delicious.
I also like my, Philadelphia Union wins.
Hot and delicious.
Hot and delicious. That's right. So you were actually down there at the game.
I think I tweeted it. After a decade of covering, I sat in the stands for the first time. So a little different vantage point, which was interesting.
See, now this is a podcast that I was interested in doing, was going down and having the fan experience and then talking about it. Actually, one of our listeners, George, volunteered to have me sit with him one time this year. I have not forgot about that, by the way, George, so I will still hit you up. But you, since you had the experience before I did, Dave Zeitlin, you tell me what it was like to be on the other side, as they say.
Yeah, well, props to the whole Union people, Ryan and Carl and some others. I got comped some nice tickets and parking. I probably shouldn't say that, but...
You didn't pay for them?
They took care of me, which was nice. Great seats. It's pretty cool because you like walk in and you're like right on the field like right away. So then you walk up. I was in close to the middle of the field, which is nice. And even in one of the top rows, you know, you feel pretty close. And everything was nice. My 5-year-old is probably not as big a sports fan as I would hope, or he's more into art and bugs and dinosaurs. But he did like Fang. He got to meet the two. He was into the first goal. He got excited. And then, like, 5 minutes later, he's like, why aren't they scoring any more goals? I want to go home. So, it was fun.
So what was it like walking around the stadium? Did you get, like, concessions? Did you buy food and beer? Was the parking situation okay? Did you leave when everybody else left? Did you get stuck coming in or coming out? What was all that? Because when we were, when we were writing about the team, we'd leave like we'd come 2 hours early.
Two hours later. Yeah, I mean, I got in maybe like half an hour before, and it wasn't too bad. We were in Lot B. It wasn't quite as crowded as I thought. Like it was a good crowd and a sellout, or close to a sellout. But I mean, there are a decent amount of empty seats around me, and it wasn't too crazy. I'm getting in, so. They parked, I picked up my ticket, said, we'll call, waited in a security line, got through, had some dollar dogs, which kind of looked like a little funky color. Oh. So hopefully I didn't get too sick. I don't think I did. So got big things of soft serve ice cream for my kid and my kid's friend who was there, and his dad was there. He spilled chocolate ice cream like all over himself, like right away.
Straight up, man.
Cool.
So
they scored early, which was nice. So he was pretty into that, and you know, I was trying to explain the players, but yeah, between like the 25th and the 45th minute, he was kind of losing interest, and
so
made some comments that would make our anti-soccer friends like, they don't score enough goals. I'm like, you sound like Dan Gelston right now, and like all the soccer.
Well, I mean, but he's 5 years old, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's come. We're, you know, he'll yeah. Even if he ends up being into dinosaurs and books and stuff like that, like his perspective growing up is different than like an older guy who's saying, "Oh, this is some un-American bullshit," you know.
He did say that too. He's like, "This is un-American bullshit."
And
I'm like, Jesus, Noah.
Wow.
yeah, and then at halftime we went up to the media room and the school Matt and George on dinosaur knowledge. Matt's like, I just listened to a dinosaur podcast, and he's like, can you name these three dinosaurs? And he's like, no. So
wow, well, that's
fun. Yeah,
that's embarrassing for Matt and George. Yeah,
it was really embarrassing. I don't think he's going to show up to the next game.
Yeah, we might have to think twice about having him return to the program. So what would you, compare.
Pretzel, and then we met Fang and Latu. Latu was so nice. I was like, no, this is the greatest Union player ever.
Well, there
he's
you
like,
go.
Oh, okay. He took a picture with him. He took a picture with Fang, who like lifted him up in the air.
Well, that's okay,
then,
man. He's 5 years
second
old.
Second half, yeah. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, like, you know, back in the day, we would make judgments about that and say, well, why aren't you into the game and blah, 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 blah. But at the end of the day, you guys went to the Philadelphia Union match and everybody had a good time, yeah?
Yeah. And then, second half, you know, he was into it. I might have given him my phone for the game. You can judge me all you want, fellow or non-parents, but had to get through it. And then we actually left right after the second goal. We were about to leave earlier, and I was like, let's wait a few more minutes. My friend wanted to leave in the 75th. I'm like, let's wait. And then they scored in like the 77th. I'm like, perfect. And then we got out of there to beat the traffic, because couldn't really afford to wait in too much traffic when it's a Sunday and the kids' bedtime and all that. So
I got to tell you,
really I
just heard scratching on the door because the door is closed, and Baxter was scratching at the door and he wanted to come in, and he's never done that before while I'm recording here. He must have, you think he heard your voice through the...
Yeah, he could sense my presence.
So the Union scored on a goalkeeper error, a terrible goalkeeper error, and then they scored on a ball that was kicked off of Jack Elliott's face, off the post, then off of his head, and into the net. So, I mean, there's a goofy way to approach that and a serious way to approach that. I'll ask you the serious question first. Was it like
I don't answer any serious questions.
What is it? Well, I mean, is your takeaway when you look at that like, oh, they were lucky, or do you say, well, shit, they're finding, like, whatever the case, they're finding ways, they're getting results, like they're getting 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, just being in the stands, I'd say there was more of an optimistic outlook to it. I mean, I just never sense, you know, they're playing a team like Houston, which is not playing well, and the Union didn't play well, but you just got the sense they're going to find a way to win, and that's, I think maybe, yeah, you tweeted it, or someone else did, like, that didn't happen in past years. Like, this is a game they probably would have tied or lost in, like, every other season, so the fact that they scored goals and won when they didn't play their best, I think, is a good sign for the growth and maturity of this team.
Yeah. So, are you outside, by the way? It sounds like you're walking down the street.
No, I'm inside. I might be pacing. Does it sound, is it bad quality?
Oh, no, you just sounded like you dropped off for a minute there, but you sound better now. Okay, so
yeah.
Yeah.
You're cutting out, like, every now and then, so hopefully it comes out okay.
Okay, well, it could be
to fish down everybody.
Well, it could either be the best podcast we've ever done or the shittiest one we've ever done, but that's okay. So I in honor of how terrible the goals were that they scored on Sunday, I looked up, I tried to remember what some of the worst Union goals of all time were, and I just wrote down a couple. Now I want to see if you remember these. I think you'll remember most of them.
Okay.
But in 2012 Brian Carroll scored a goal where there's like a scrum in the box and Carlos Valdez Carlos Valdez just took a wild swing at the ball and it hit some DC United player in the face and it fell to Brian Carroll like 1 inch from the goal line and he kicked the ball in. Yeah. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. I remember Brian Carroll would only score versus DC and he did it like 3 or 4 times in the span of those couple years between the Open Cup and MLS play. So, I vaguely remember they weren't like the prettiest goals, but he just be in the right place, right time. Yeah.
There was like a stat for the longest time where I think he had like 5 Union goals and like 4 of them were against DC or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. God. They weren't great either. They were all like bad goals.
You know, but Ray Gattis would kill for a bad goal. I mean, if Brian Carroll can score that many goals, Ray Gattis should have had one by now.
I can't believe it hasn't happened yet. My God.
How many minutes has he played without scoring? It is kind of a weird thing at this point.
I don't know.
Like he'd like just get one bad bounce.
He's played something like more than 10,000 minutes, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Which is like his if he does score a goal, his goals per minutes rate will be like 1 per 13,000 minutes or something like that. So
yeah.
Okay. So another one that I wrote down. Do you remember Zach Pfeffer, who came on the Always Soccer in Philadelphia program not long ago? He scored one against New York City where there's a cross that came into the box. And then Eric Ayuk claimed the goal, he went and did a bunch of backflips. But when they went and shared the replay, he actually hit the ball off Pfeffer's rear end, and I think Pfeffer got credit.
Yeah, that was a funny post locker room scene. I remember Pfeffer was kind of making fun of it. Was that the flips that Ayuk did where two tried to copy it and just did it? A somersault like next to him? Was that the same moment or?
I think it was. Yeah, I want to say it was. That was 2015. God, that was a good one. But could you imagine if you thought you scored a goal and you got all excited and you went and did a couple back handsprings and then they gave the goal to somebody else because you hit it off their ass? Could you imagine that?
I can confidently say I can't imagine scoring a goal and then doing backflips. Both of those things.
only for it to be given to someone else, you know. So
yeah.
There was another terrible goal. I know that you remember this one. It was I can't get through these without even like describing them. I gotta take a deep breath here. Hang on. All right. So 2012, Chandler Hoffman was out there, and there was a cross that was played in, and he claims that he got a touch on it, but I highly, highly doubt that he got a touch on it. But they may have skimmed like one of his hairs on his head. And then the goalkeeper thought he was going to head it and he didn't. So it basically just like went right past the goalkeeper and a Dallas player or something like flapped it and completely missed. But Hoffman, I think, told us after the game that it was his goal.
I remember that. Yeah. My two other biggest Chandler Hoffman memories are he scored like there's a game at PPL. It was like a reserve league game or something, and he scored like 4 or 5 goals, and like no one was there to see it.
He scored 4 goals, yeah.
And then my other Chandler Hoffman memory is walking on 22nd Street with my dog near Washington, and he just popped up behind me and was petting my dog. So.
I wrote down another one. Here's the last. I had two other ones written down, but they're not as good. In 2010, this is going way back, Alejandro Moreno scored like 2 goals in 30 games, I think. And one of them was against Dallas. The Union lost 3-1 to Dallas. Moreno, Latu, like, took a shot that got deflected and it bounced up in the air. And there was basically just like a mass of bodies. And Moreno, like, bull rushed the mass of bodies and like 3 people fell over. And the ball just kind of rolled into the net. And while he was on the ground, he was swinging at it, trying to hit it, and he missed. But because everybody like fell over, the ball just rolled in. Yeah, it was a terrible goal. It was one of his 2.
What year was that?
That was 2010. It was 2010. It was Union. Man. It was Union 1, Dallas 3. I knew he had it. I was thinking of this. I'm like,
that
he scored
way too long ago.
Yeah, it was 9 years ago, man. That's crazy.
Crazy.
as the Jim Sapala's Kia guy would say. But yeah, that was terrible, terrible goals. So I found it ironic that you, when you were down there, you saw two of the worst Union goals of all time.
They like to impress me. They're like, you remember 2012? Here's another sneak peek for you. I'm like, thanks guys.
So when you write it home. When you were down there, or this year in general, and I know we like barely touched on this in the impromptu podcast from a couple weeks, about like a month or two ago. But how do you feel now that you and I have both quit the beat and the Union are finally good?
I know. It feels like these guys now like didn't pay their dues. I guess most of them did. Matt the Georgetown and Joe, they all saw some.
Do you believe in that you should have to cover? You should have to cover years of a shitty team before you're able to cover a good team.
I'm not like upset about it. Like, it's actually fun to see Jim Curtin, and you know, as a not covering the team now, we can almost sort of like root for him a little bit, because we always like Jim. And,
yeah.
And, it was always a great team to cover too, in terms of, you know, like access and the players being nice to us and things like that. So, I mean, I'm definitely happy for them. It is kind of funny to think of, like, not only they weren't good, I mean, I feel like, you know, I was covering for a few years there, I was covering articles, like, every day from, like, 2012, and they seem so, like, meaningless now, just, like, looking back on some of the people I was writing about who are, like, no longer here and have been gone for a while.
Yeah.
It's interesting to look back.
I think
some of the articles I wrote.
Now that I've covered the Sixers for 2 years, two playoff runs for that team, like, it does put it in perspective, like, just how many more people are reading your stuff, how much more dialed in the fan base is. But it was always like kind of special because the Union was new and we were all kind of like coming up together with the fan base. Like, we were there from the beginning, you know, so it felt like it was kind of yours. I don't know, like, the community felt like kind of strong between like players and writers and fans and stuff like that, because it was like, well, it's still brand new and it's our thing. We've been here from the beginning, so you didn't really care that they were shit. But I mean, yeah, it would have been nice to cover a winning team, right?
It would have, yeah. And I guess we did in 2011, right?
We covered the 2011 team. Yeah.
Back in that team, it's like, it wasn't like that exciting a team. I don't think, was it? I mean, they didn't score that many goals, like. I think they didn't, like, let in that many, but it never felt like that was the start of something great or anything. It just kind of felt like the league was so different back then. They were just, like...
No, they just had a great defense. Yeah, they had a great defense, and the thing is they didn't win a ton of games, but they didn't lose games. I think they had, like, 15 draws. Yeah. Yeah, 15 draws, yeah. Man, because they only finished with 48 points, that team. So if this year's team wins this weekend... then they'll have tied the 2011 team for their point total. So, yeah.
Do you think people were paying less attention? Like, if all the shit that happened back in 2012 when they shipped out Alatu and Caleb and Mwanga and then Novak was fired, I mean, it's like we had a ton of things to like write about back then.
Yeah.
Like, do you think it would get like more play now in the media than it did back then?
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, and with that, a lot of, like, secrets and a lot of crazy stuff was buried, too. Stuff that we always said, man, if this was any other team in town and people learned about this stuff or this stuff got out, or even the stuff that was public, like Novak, that it would have been crazy, you know? So the running joke is, like, you know, write the book about it, you know? But the thing with the book is, like, I don't know where I would even start. You know, so maybe I'll just tell it. Maybe I'll just do the book. Maybe I'll just do the book on this podcast. Like, maybe I'll just tell one story every month or something, and I'll do it. It'll be an audio book.
Oh man, you could charge for that.
I could, but the other thing I was looking at is like, if I was ever going to write this book, like, I would need a great lawyer, because there is a lot of like fucked up legal stuff that I don't really know if what I could tell or what I couldn't tell without getting like sued into oblivion. You know what I mean?
Can you imagine getting sued over a story you told about, like, the 2012 Union on a podcast? The judge would be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, hopefully he would just he or she would just dismiss it outright, you know what I mean?
Like, I don't understand any of this.
Yeah. Say what? With Fareed Mondragon? Yeah, okay, we're just going to drop this whole thing. So.
Yeah, it's a settle.
I know, right? But, you know, maybe what we'll do... I was joking with somebody about this the other week, but I said, maybe what we'll do is we'll just gather a bunch of people and we'll get a ghostwriter to do it. And we'll put it on like the Players Tribune or something. Like 10 former journalists and 10 former Philadelphia Union players tell their story to some poor guy who has to like transcribe the whole damn thing, you know?
Yeah.
My story.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the Players Tribune will publish it. I feel like there's no one else. At the same time, while coverage might seem like it's more now, I feel like there's less outlets covering the Union. I mean, I used to be the beat writer for CSN. They stopped covering the Union. MLS does less. The Athletic did it for like a year and then kind of stopped. So that's been too bad to see as well. But
you were a little
different podcast.
You were a little less public in expressing your dissatisfaction with the Athletic.
Oh, yeah.
Matt, I loved Matt's Athletic trolling. He seemed to make it very clear that he was unhappy with what happened there.
He didn't say anything for a while because I think he was hoping they'd kind of come to their senses a little bit, but he's not too happy. I mean, I'm pretty happy with my job and everything. I would have liked to have, you know, contributed a few features here and there, but there's not many places to write Union features anymore, unfortunately.
No, I know. It's sad. I mean, there's still the problem is that there's still not a lot of money in it, you know?
Yeah.
And there's really not a lot of outlets. So it's like you don't really see, you know, the Union are good, but that hasn't really reflected. I mean, it's not like they're cutting into the Eagles, Sixers, Phillies, Flyers, like piece of the pie with the Inquirer and, you know, other local outlets. I mean, the Inquirer has a bunch of problems as it is with like cuts and buyouts and stuff like that. So it is what it is. I mean, you could say that the industry struggles are their own thing, of course, and that doesn't help, you know, soccer coverage, obviously. So,
Yeah. But I mean, people would always say before that, like, once the team got good, then their coverage would grow. And I think it's showing that's not the case. I was always kind of skeptical about that because I just think people's opinions on sports are so ingrained that even if the team does do well, it wouldn't change anything. And it hasn't so far. I mean, maybe if they win a championship or even just win in the playoffs, it'll change. But I mean, you don't see like Inquirer columnists going out to cover this team now that they're in first place. And even when Bedoya is making all these things, he's making like national news. He's in the Guardian and places like that, but the Inquirer is not sending out their like big guns, or, you know, I mean, just people in the city aren't covering them more because of that. So,
well, right. And John's already doing like I think people know, but just to reiterate, like Tannenwald does like all kinds of stuff like on the desk for them, you know, I mean, it's not like his only job is to do their soccer stuff, you know? So, and that's how it was for you and me too. Like you had other jobs. I had other jobs. We were all like freelancers the Union was always like a side thing, you know? So you're never going to be able to make enough money doing it to do it exclusively. It's not a full-time job anyway, really, because the season's kind of weird. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I guess I thought there might be more interest in it now. I mean, podcast listenership, I can say that, like, our listenership is up, like, 30% this year.
That's because I left.
No. That's not the reason why. It's because the team's good, you know? So, yeah. I mean, but you and I were sitting here, like, a year ago or a year and a half ago saying, like, what the hell are, like, do we even really want to do this? This, you know, should we do a podcast now? No, let's do it next week.
Another podcast.
yeah, I know, because we just didn't really have that. We weren't super excited. I mean, remember we did that whole winter where we're like, okay, we're not doing a podcast until something happens, right? And then that's when the David Akam trade happened, right? Isn't that what we did?
Yeah.
So, yeah, long gone are those days. Okay, so let me ask you one more serious question here. So Jim came out this week and he said that Aurelien Collin is the guy at center back alongside Jack Elliott, which means that Austin Trussie and Mark McKenzie are on the bench, two homegrowns who we all thought were going to be starting this year. Brandon Aaronson's going to be on the bench now he was on the bench for Warren Cravall, and then Jamiro Montero's coming back. So, like, the homegrowns played all these minutes earlier in the year, and now they're just kind of not really part of it. So what did you make of the Collin thing and, like, the homegrown thing in general now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love it right now. It's also a lot, this isn't bad, but it's mostly foreign players. I think I was looking at the lineup, during the national anthem. I think it was, is it just Bedoya and Gattis I guess Corval too, but they're yeah, there just aren't as many Americans, which is fine. The homegrown problem is, yeah, I mean, it's an issue, I think, just because it generated so much excitement and you kind of need those guys playing for them to keep improving. I don't really get the Colin thing too much. I mean, Trusty I didn't think was bad. I haven't been following as much as you. Did you think Trusty should have been taken out of the lineup? Or
I mean, the defense was struggling a bit, and so I guess he was the guy who went. But Jack Elliott wasn't that great in the 2-4-0 losses either. Like, I think you could have justified taking either one of them out of the lineup, but I think Elliott's been better than Trusty throughout the year. I think Austin has trouble for some reason with directness, some like straight long balls over the top he struggled with. Sometimes when guys run right at him, he's not that great. I don't know, but it does seem strange. It does seem counterintuitive, or not counterintuitive, yeah, but counterproductive to what they've preached over the years, you know?
Yeah. It almost seems like a weird flex. Like, they're like, we have so much more depth. Like, in years past, we wouldn't have had Colin or like RJ Allen or these guys. I mean, these are like veteran MLS players who have been on the bench, and it almost feels like Curtin saying, you know, I mean, we have these guys, we're going to use them for a few games because we couldn't have done that in the past. So, I mean,
yeah,
if it's just a few games for Colin to come in, you know, steady the ship, it's fine. I mean, Trusty and McKenzie, they're not going anywhere. Hopefully it doesn't hurt their development. I think fans are particularly jaded when it comes to homegrowns because they saw so many young, talented players kind of show so much promise for their first year or two and then fall off a cliff. You'd like to think that wouldn't happen anymore, but it's just a better like infrastructure in place.
Well, then they got to start selling. I mean, because if they're going to do this thing where they come out flying, they commit to the homegrowns, and then eventually they take a backseat to the veterans and the foreign guys who come in and out play them, then they're going to have to start being a selling club, you know, because where else, what's the alternative? You're just going to have a bunch of homegrown talent, like, not on the field, right?
Yeah, and I don't think that's the long-term plan. I mean, unless they've changed their whole, like, outlook on things. I mean, I think their plan has always been to play as many homegrowns as possible and for them to become stars. And, yeah, of course, a few of them will be sold, and that's a good thing. But I don't think they're bringing these guys up just to be on the bench. I think it's a combination of just a short-term thing where they have more depth and they have good veteran players right now, and they don't need to play the homegrowns. But I'd be surprised if, like, going into like next year, there weren't, you know, 4 homegrowns in this starting lineup on the first day.
So one of the listeners asked, I think it was Jared actually asked about the alumni night. So I figured we would do that now.
Tony Stahl.
Yeah, like, what the hell? So, like, I looked at the list, and I was just like flabbergasted that by some of the names that were on here, because some of these guys like did not leave on the greatest of terms, or like weren't even like here for 5 seconds. You know what I mean? Like, the list is, well, let's just go down the list. All right. Fred, fine. He's already there anyway, right?
He's there anyway. Yeah.
Zach Pfeffer, great. The Far fans, both of the Far fans. Yeah, cool. Yeah. Brian Carroll, Ryan Richter, Danny Califf. Be nice to see you. Be nice to see him again.
Caleb's a good one. He's out in California still, I think, so that'd be good to get him back. He was always a fan favorite.
Sebastian Letu, of course, he's already down there. Carlos Ruiz is coming back.
Nice. Fish. Yeah, he left on terrible terms, right?
Yeah, and then Novak blamed it on the fans.
That's the craziest post-game press conference ever, where Peter Novak like blamed the fans and like, you guys don't understand Carlos Ruiz.
Well, do we pretty have to cool, go like, down? Like, do we have to go down there and ask these guys? Like, Mondragon is on there too. Do we have to ask them? Hey, why the hell? Why did you guys leave the team in the first place? We never got an answer like 8 years ago.
That'd be good. I think you should go down and just do really hard hitting questions about Peter Novak, like not giving them water, and then try to break a big story.
Well, the rumor, the rumor too, for the longest time, that was that like Ruiz had like a tax evasion or a financial problem or something like that. That was floating around for a long time.
I didn't hear that.
Somebody told me that.
Remember the highlight of Amy's career was getting the two Carlos Ruizes together before the Phillies game once. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, Chooch with the other, yeah. Chooch with Pescadito.
Chooch and the Fish.
Yeah, Chooch and Pescadito. Kleberson's going to be there. Barnett is going to be there, which is cool. He's going to come all the way back.
He'll get a good reception.
Sumare?
Who?
Bakary Sumare?
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, why would he come back?
Yeah. Didn't he have that comment on Twitter once making fun of Chester Park?
Yeah, well, I can't wait to show him the maybe I'll go down there and show him the power training complex. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Carlos Valdez is coming back. The fuck?
That's a weird one because he was so beloved his first stint and then so bad his second stint. So
yeah.
Let's just assume it's first stint. Carlos Valdez, not...
Well, because he showed up.
Carlos Valdez.
Yeah, because he showed up in jeans on the first day of like training. Do you remember that at YSC? Like he showed up in street clothes, and they talked to Albright, and then he like left.
At the end of was that the end of the first stint or the beginning of the second stint? I can't keep track anymore.
No, he came back. No, he came back midway through 2014. Because remember, he played in the U.S. Open Cup final.
Yeah.
So that would have been the beginning of the 2015 season.
So yeah, first he played in a little tournament in Brazil, and then him and Mboli were signed around the same time to bolster the club down the stretch, and that worked out.
Yeah, Shannon's coming back. Oka Nikolov, Tony Stahl. Holy shit!
Is Shannon still playing? What happened? Is he playing anywhere right now?
No, Shannon's with the Shannon's with
the
academy.
He was at Galaxy last year.
No, he's with the academy. He's with YSC now.
Shannon?
Shannon Williams has something to do with YSC now, I think. Tony Stahl, I would love to talk to him. Ollie Moreno's coming back. JT Newman.
Do you think Tony Stahl has had like this apartment in like Delaware County for like 9 years, just like waiting for this moment?
Why would you
invite his first season with the Union so much and couldn't leave and has just been waiting in the shadows for this call?
Now Tony didn't play another game after the red card, right?
Did he? I know. Yeah, that sounds right. I know David Myrie only played that first game.
David Myrie, yeah. JT Noon was here for 5 minutes. He was from Harrisburg.
David Myrie and Tony Stahl will forever be the two players who played in the first ever Philadelphia Union game. It's the greatest stat.
Yeah, and Danny Maranga was an attacking midfielder.
The first Union game.
Yeah, God. And then Farid Mondragon, too. I heard some shit about him that I'd like to ask him. Like, why would he come back?
Yeah, he had a good 1 year. He was in the All-Star game, do you remember, at Red Bull Arena. He made the playoffs.
God.
And, yeah, he kind of left them to lurch in the preseason. He was like, they weren't sure if he was going to be there, and he basically peaced out before 2012.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to questions, but first I want to do an exercise. This is a segment that Russ and I added only like two episodes ago. Not sure if you're familiar with it, but basically I think it's funny as hell when I hear like British people try to pronounce a word that ends in the letter A, and they pronounce it like it's an ER. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, Paul Pogba. You know, they have this like weird like, I don't know what it is, it's called, like a rhotic R or something. If there's like a linguist who listens to the podcast, I would love to have you on the podcast to explain why British people pronounce words that end in A like an ER. You know?
Yeah.
Goner, the country of Goner, right?
So pay attention, linguist.
So I have four of them. I have four of them for you, and I want to hear you pronounce them, okay?
Okay.
The first one is Danny Mwanga.
I have to say it normally, or
no? You have to say it like you're British.
All right, Mwanga.
Danny Mwanga.
I don't have a good British accent. This is a bad game for me.
Okay, I'll do them, and then we'll get to questions about that.
All right, you do.
Macquarie Court at the Palestra. Macquarie Court at the Palestra. All right, this is what you get. This is what
that feels like. That feels like a personal like attack at me that doing the sponsor at the historic Palestra. I don't appreciate that.
You haven't adopted Macquarie Court.
I don't like Macquarie Court that much.
I didn't think you would. Tannenwald doesn't like it.
As long as I don't change the actual name, the Palestra is fine.
All right, this is what you get when you eat something that hasn't been cooked. You get salmonella. And the last one, this was a movie that came out like 10 or 15 years ago. I don't know when. But it was called V is for Vendetta.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen that movie.
All right,
have
so
you seen any
was,
good movies recently?
I watched the 3-hour Avengers movie. Did you watch that?
I watched The Hateful Eight yesterday. That's the first time I'd seen that. Tarantino.
Would you recommend
crazy.
That?
Crazy movie.
So that was words that end in the letter A. Thanks for participating. We're going to get to questions.
Sorry. I like ruined that segment for you.
No, I had to explain it. I guess I should just do it with Russ from now on, you know, but that's all right.
Okay. All right. I was not prepared for that segment.
All right. So let's rip through these questions. Ready? Cause the Eagles are coming on soon.
Eagles are playing tonight.
Yeah. The Eagles in the playoffs.
Who are they playing?
The Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, isn't that Nick Foles' team?
Yeah, but he's not playing tonight. Like, the preseason's so fucking useless, but whatever. Okay, we got a question from Union Hulk. He says, where Bethlehem play next year? Are they staying with us? Mario Balotelli is free and still out there. Can Kevin Dino and Zaitlin Dino explain to Hulk why Balotelli is not on the Union? Is it because we're poor or because he blew his bathroom up? Is it because do we not have Balotelli because he blew his bathroom up?
I think Bethlehem Steel should sign Balotelli to really boost the attendance numbers for that. What do you think?
I would love to see them play in Delaware. I thought maybe they could go play at the Sixers thing down there, but I don't think there's room. I don't know if they have there's no outdoor stadium down there, is there? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. They could probably play in the Lehigh Valley again at some point, you would think, if their name's Bethlehem Steel, but yes.
A lot of people wanted to know about this cannon that was at the game on Saturday. What was going on with the cannon?
Yeah, I mean, I noticed it. After the goal, there was a loud cannon. I didn't really pay too much attention to it. I don't think my kid even noticed it, but I guess people were upset as hell. I mean, I think there's some section of fans that don't want the whole, like, minor league baseball vibe, and I don't think the Union really do that. I could live without the cannon. It wasn't a great... I don't think it's really, like, ahead of anything. It didn't really bother me either. The best part was, before the game, they had a helicopter and three people... glide in on parachutes onto the field. That was
kind of
cool.
Josh from the Wonder Years says, next year I'm thinking I'm going to Union at Nashville. What's a team city stadium that you travel to for an away match? I mean, I've never been to the Pacific.
Nashville. That's a good call.
Nashville's a good town. I've been there before. I haven't been to the Northwest, so I'd want to go to probably Portland, I guess.
Yeah, I would like to hit up the Cascadia, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver. Maybe I'll go into Tanner Wall's suitcase next time he makes the trip, which will be in a few more months. I think he goes every few months. So.
That's right. Okay, we talked about this last week on the podcast, so I'll just reiterate what I said. But Tallahassee Union says, drink some brews and give us your thoughts on MLS banning the Iron Front symbol. So last week, what we were talking about, the signage, the rule that of the fan conduct where MLS doesn't want like political signage in the stadiums, and MLS said that they banned Iron Front because they determined it to be they determined that specifically to be political. I don't really have thoughts on them banning that one way or another. My point that I made last week was that like what they're trying to avoid is like, you don't want people in like section 135 holding up signs that say Iron Front, and then in section 145 it's like a Donald Trump TIFO, you know. So I think what MLS is trying to do, regardless of whether they're doing it the right way, I think they're just trying to say that, look, we don't want our stadiums to turn into like a big like battle of political and social ideas and stuff like that, because I think they just see it as like a slippery slope to like stuff that doesn't have anything to do with what everybody's there for in the first place. You know, I think that's I think that's the purpose of it.
I'm sorry. I have the Donald Trump info in my head now, and I just threw up in my mouth a little bit. So I can't really focus on anything else. But, how the Donald Trump info would look terrible.
Well, no, but I don't, Like, I mean, you could sit here and split hairs all day about, you know, give MLS like a list of like 50 symbols and they could say, this is political, this is not political, this is political, but this one's not political. Like, I think they're just trying to avoid that, all of that in general. You know what I mean? Like, I think if Alejandro Bedoya comes out and says, end gun violence, and then the Sons of Ben have a banner that says, end gun violence, okay, I mean, that's, there's nothing like inherently political about that. But if it turns into something where like, you know, of you got somebody hanging an NRA banner in one end of the stadium to counter that, I think that's what MLS is trying to avoid. So that's my only like real.
It's hard to figure out what's political these days. And like, I mean, you would say soccer teams stand for certain things and soccer fan groups stand for certain things, like pro immigration. It's like a big issue probably because we get people from every different country, every different continent, fans are from everywhere. So you'd like to think that's not a political issue, but it's kind of become one in these times, which is sad too. But
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that that's a topic I actually would probably do an entire separate podcast on, like depending on what, because I feel like we haven't heard the end of like MLS trying to figure it out. You know what I mean? So
yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, let me see here. I'm just going to skim through some of these because I think we talked about them already. EJ McGrogan says, over or under 25 goals for Casper's Union career?
He's already in double digits, so if he stays another year, I'll get the over, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't, like, again, I said at the beginning of the year, like, I'm not, like, super high on, I'm not super high or super low on him as a player. I think he's like, I think you could plug a lot of people into the position that he's in now. I think if CJ Sapong was in Casper's position, he'd also have like 10 to 12 goals. I think Corey Burke would probably have 10 to 12 goals if he was playing Casper's spot right now. I don't see Casper Shabilko as like a next level kind of player. Yeah. I think he's a good player.
It's also hard to tell because we would have said at this time last year, Corey Burke would have had the over on 25, but he had a great year last year, and now he's banned from the country. So
Yeah. So it's not to take anything away from Casper, but I think because they have such a good midfield and they do create chances for him, like I think you could probably plug in a number of guys who would probably be able to do what he's doing. So it's not a slight. It's just I don't think he's head and shoulders above those other guys I mentioned. You know, so.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. There's an argument going on here. So, are there any teams left on the schedule where you think they need to start in something other than 4-4-2?
What do you think?
No. I mean, it's a good shape. It's worked for them a lot this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim's come out playing 4-2-3-1 to start games like twice or like two or three times, I want to say. But he usually goes switches to it in game when Elsinho comes in. Elsinho goes over to the right, you know. So,
yeah.
Derek says, "Does Neil Lennon have a clue what he's doing?" I will say no. Celtic lost to Cluj, and they are out of the Champions League. Do you have any thoughts on the? Because I haven't really followed it. I'm not sure if you have. Like the Philadelphia Fury and like the.
Oh yeah. I mean, I know they're playing at Franklin Field, which is weird. I'm not seeing this as a big team. I think if they're thinking Franklin Field is a big draw for them, I'd be a little wary because it's not like a location where a lot of people are. I mean, college students are obviously near there and it's close to Center City, but it's not really too close of a walk, and I don't really see too many casual fans just popping over to Franklin Field for a Fury game. What do you think?
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I'm not like super like really focused. I'm not really interested in that right now. If they play one season and it turns out to be interesting, and if they last like more than a season, then okay, we'll give them some attention. But like, I'm not like you know, there's been so much shuffle and lower.
I don't think it's gonna look good at Franklin Field. Because, I mean, you think back to all the teams used to play in big stadiums and Franklin Field is so old, and it doesn't look good when it's empty, which it usually is, except during pen relays. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's gonna look great, and I don't think they're gonna go. But hopefully, it does well. But we always said we wanted a team in downtown Philly, so
we're
gonna get, I guess, for a while.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. I'll put that one on the back burner. Okay, let's do three more and then we'll wrap it up. Joe says, what current player would you put in the Ring of Honor with Latu?
Current player? Regina team right now. I think it's got to be Bedoya.
Bedoya or Blake if they stick around for a year or two more.
Yep. Yeah, Bedoya or Blake are probably the only two real options right now. I mean, unless you go like longevity and like Ray Gaddis or something, but you probably do Brian Kyle before him. But
yeah.
I mean, I think Bedoya has been all you could ask for as a captain, as a leader. As you know, he's really helped like usher this franchise forward. I mean, he hasn't been well game he's played, but he's done his job. He's been a good leader. He kind of meshes well with the guys, and he meshes well with Curtin. And I think they're really happy with him, and he'd be a top choice for me. And I think he might end up there, to be honest.
Silver Ray says thoughts on putting down AstroTurf to protect the grass when football, lacrosse, and rugby come to town. Audi Field was trash in D.C. because lacrosse came through and Talon's had its troubles. Yeah, I don't know enough about that. I don't think it's necessarily that safe for the other sports to play on turf that's dropped over grass, or grass that's dropped over grass, you know, or grass that's dropped over fake turf. You know, it just seems like Ernie would have had a nightmare with this if he was still here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I see both sides of it. They kind of need to, like, rent that place out, too, just to make a little money. It seems weird just to have a place just for home soccer games. So, I mean, I understand that them renting it out, but you do want to limit the wear and tear in the field, obviously.
Yeah. All right, here's the last one. Explain why the Keystone State Ultras chant that the whole stadium took up felt like such an organic, unique, and cool moment versus the cannon being not a cool moment.
I mean, it's right there. I mean, one was organic. It was cool because you don't usually see chants go between different parts of the stadium. We're so used to just seeing the Sons of Ben, and this kind of involved a few more sections. So, and the cannon is just a thing that the team does. You know, the fans don't really have much to do with that, I don't think. Maybe the Sons of Ben do, but yeah, I mean, the chant, all the videos I saw were pretty cool, and it was fun. I actually missed it. I think it was at the end of the game right after I left, so that'll teach me to leave games early for my son's bedtime.
Straight up, man. Well, listen, that'll do it for this episode of It's Always Soccer in Philadelphia. Kevin Kincaid Baxter is here. Dave Zeitlin rejoining the program. Dave, it was good to have you on again, my man. Yeah, you got to give yourself more credit in your contributions to creating the podcast.
Yes. Yes. From now on, I will tell everyone I'm the reason the podcast is good, and I'm the reason that the team is in first place. All the hard work I put in writing terrible articles and doing terrible podcasts.
That's right. We paved the way.
The groundwork. Yeah.
Yeah. So that others who came later could benefit from it.
Exactly.
That's right. Hey, it's always soccer in Philadelphia. We will see you again next time, and hopefully your town, your team, your Philadelphia Union will remain in first place. Peace out.